All right, good afternoon. Welcome to episode 4 of the Big D Podcast. I'm Mike. On today's episode, this one's going to be called Stigma Kills, the Deep Dirty Secrets about Addiction and Judgment. Couple things I want to touch on before. Number one is I've gotten some feedback from my wife, and I say you know too much. So I'm going to work on that as much as I can. Number two, last week I had said I was going to see a movie. That was actually the first movie that I had seen since I came out of treatment. And it was the first movie I think I've seen sober in 20-some years. And I saw F1 with Brad Pitt, and it was fantastic. It had a little bit of everything. Kept you wondering what was going to happen. Great movie. Side note there. If you have the opportunity, go check that one out. It's in IMAX. It's pretty cool. So today, we're going to talk about stigma. And in our case, it's going to be the stigma of addiction. We're going to talk about history, language, the justice system, healthcare, families, mental health, suicide, and what the hell are we going to do about this going forward as both addicts and people that addiction has touched their lives. So what is stigma? And why should we care about that? Why should someone who doesn't know anybody with drug or alcohol problems care about the stigma of addiction? It's pretty simple, right? Stigma towards people with substance use disorders is one of the most significant barriers of treatment and recovery and long-term health. It's not, I don't have the opportunity to get help. It's not, I don't want to get help. It's the stigma of what everybody else thinks. And that becomes a significant problem. So what we're going to talk about is what that does to addiction, what that does to people with addiction, how that affects people who love people with addiction problems. And, you know, a report in 2021 came out and said 90% of people with substance use disorders do receive treatment. And the main reason is shame, fear of being judged, or lack of access. So 90% of people that probably should be in treatment aren't in treatment for one of those three reasons, right? And two of them really have to do with stigma. So 90%. Let that sit in for a second while we're talking. You know, we're not losing people because we don't care. We're losing them because they think they don't deserve to be saved because of the stigma of addiction. Where does stigma come from? You know, and I'll give you a heads up. Stigma is not anything new. It came Adam and Eve. Right? In 1875, San Francisco passed the first anti-opium law in the United States, and it was specifically targeting Chinese immigrants. In 1910, cocaine was criminalized as white newspapers claimed that African American men were using it to resist arrest. So they were using cocaine to resist arrest. However, cocaine and had been used for municipal medicine purposes in the United States for hundreds of years. In the 1930s, marijuana actually became a target. In the 1930s, because it was used as a tool to demoralize Mexican farm workers. Between 1971, which if anybody doesn't understand the history of the war on drugs, it actually started under President Nixon in 1971. And 2023, the U.S. has spent $1 trillion on drug enforcement. And what do we get for that $1 trillion, right? We've incarcerated millions of Americans, millions of our neighbors. We have a healthcare system that treats addiction as a crime and not a disease. We're going to talk specifically about that. And then we have a culture that blames, shames, and isolates the people that need the most connected. We had talked about this on the last episode as a warning sign of addiction is isolation. Isolated people need the most connection. They need it from a human level. And isolation is a really big cause of addiction in the United States. And if you think this isn't about race and power, chew on this one. African American people make up 13% of the U.S. population, but account for 29% of all drug-related arrests. It's not a mistake, people. It is an absolute strategy. What about the medical system? That should be medicine for all, correct? No. When someone with addiction actually makes it to a hospital, and I know this as an alcoholic, I was hospitalized for kidney failure, strokes last year, every single time I was sick, and rightly so, I was asked, are you using alcohol? Now, most of the time I lied, but I was asked. In 2018, there was a study from Johns Hopkins University that over 70% of primary care physicians harbor negative attitudes towards people with substance abuse disorders. So you have a 7 out of 10 chance of selecting a primary care doctor that has negative attitudes, a negative attitude about addiction. And think about the millions of Americans that addiction affects. So you have a 30% chance of getting a GP that has an open mind that will help get you proper treatment. Some won't treat them. Some avoid them. Some mark charts. It's very common to mark charts as drug seekers, manipulative, non-compliant. Imagine walking into, and I've done this, imagine walking into an ER because you're withdrawal, you're shaking, sweating, throwing up, and the doctor's treating you like you're wasting time. That happened to me in February. I was so sick, I had to drink to get in there. And my mom, God bless her, brought me to the hospital. And I got there and I said, I'm going to be withdrawing from alcohol. They did blood work and my blood alcohol was 0.39. I was fine. I had serious chronic alcoholism. I was able to function. And they were going to send me home. They're like, you're just drunk. Go home. Sleep it off. And if it wasn't for pleading and other things, that was said, I ended up being hospitalized and went into detox, and we talked some of that story, but it was absolutely terrible. That becomes an issue because someone is literally going in there for help. It's a medical issue. Withdrawing from alcohol will kill you. Withdrawing from benzos will kill you. and to be like, ah, just go home. Have a nice day. Hope for the best. It's a really tough pill to swallow. You know, a survey in 2022 by Pew Charitable Trust, 1 in 3 people said they left a healthcare setting without getting treatment because of how they're treated after disclosing addiction. They could feel it. Right? You're treated differently. You just are. It's not just stigma. It's medical abandonment is what it is. Switching from the medical side to the mental health side, suicide and the shame spiral, according to the Centers for Disease Control, 1 in 4 people die by suicide in the United States have a substance use disorder. 1 in 4. And here's what's really wild is in 2023, the National Alliance on Mental Illness Alliance showed that people with co-occurring mental illness and addiction are 40% more likely to be denied treatment than those with only one diagnosis. So if you're depressed and using alcohol to cope, drugs to cope, if you have anxiety and you're using uppers or downers to cope, you might not get treatment for either. Add stigma to that, and you're carrying around a double burden. And the question is, why can't you just stop? You're weak. Or the best one is you're doing this to yourself. You know, 63% of people in recovery say that the stigma was harder to survive than the addiction itself. I feel it all the time. It doesn't matter who it is. You are judged, right? You know, and then you get to the tough part. And that's within your walls, the family factor. You're judged at home. You know, it comes around the dinner table. Over 50% of people in early recovery say that they are rejected or emotionally cut off by family members after disclosing that they sought treatment or they need treatment. And could you imagine being a parent? Could you imagine being a mother with an addiction problem? Guess what the first thing out of people's mouths is? You're a bad mother. Women are twice as likely to lose custody of their kids due to addiction, even though they are actively in treatment. How's that for you? You get help, you're still going to lose your kids. You know, I know moms in recovery who have breastfed while they've been on Suboxone, and they still get labeled unfit. That's not justice at all. It's cruelty is really what it is. And what about, you know, the criminalization? You know, the justice system. You know, 65% of incarcerated people meet the criteria for substance use disorder. 65% of people that are incarcerated fit the criteria for substance use disorder. The percentage of people that actually receive treatment is 11% while they're on the inside. Department of Corrections, rehabilitation? No. It's punishment, and it's setting up people who have made mistakes because of addiction for failure the rest of their lives because they're not getting the treatment that they need while they are incarcerated. So what do? We lock them up for using drugs. and then we deny them the help while they detox in jail cells. People die in county jails because they're withdrawing from drugs. And then we release them. All right? Let them out. No treatment, no plan, no housing, no meds. And guess what we are when they reoffend for drug use? We're shocked when they do it again. You didn't learn your lesson? 5 years? You didn't learn your lesson? We didn't give them the help they needed. And that's not because we don't have access to it. It's the stigma of putting public money into helping those with addiction. You know, the risk of a fatal overdose is 40 times higher the first 2 weeks after someone is incarcerated. The first 2 weeks. So, as soon as they're walking out the door, people are 40% higher from percentage higher of dying of an overdose. You know, it's not a relapse. It's a death sentence by design. We can also talk about employment. Man, this is something I'm going to talk about a lot as a former HR person. I'm going to talk quite a bit about this. It is absolutely ridiculous in this country, right? And it's what's called the second chance lie. You know, you ever hear about this? We believe in second chances. According to a 2021 National Recovery Survey, 60% of employers say they're reluctant to hire somebody with a history of addiction, even if they're clean, certified, and qualified. You know, I was in a group yesterday, a recovery group, and a young lady lost her job after 2 weeks of employment because background check came back. Even though she disclosed everything, she wrote a letter of justification. She's in treatment. Really, really kind, nice person. Made mistakes in the past, and they let her go because they quote-unquote defined her as high risk. So they let her go. 2 weeks of employment. Went to work every day. Positive attitude. In treatment. Have a nice day. And it happens. It happens all the time. And you have people that work for companies that they're the greatest people and all this sort of thing. And man, if they don't discriminate against people with addiction issues, it's unbelievable. And I saw it in talent departments. I saw it in HR departments. And it's too bad because a lot of times when people are really committed to recovery, they're really committed to changing their life, you have the opportunity as an employer to get someone who is going to work as hard as they can. Not for you to make a dollar, but to help them feel good about the stigma that's out there, that they can't do it, because that's what they've been told. You're never going to amount to anything. You destroyed your life. It's over. Have a nice day. You do the work, you go to rehab, you get sober, you rebuild, but society will never let you outrun your past. Take me for an example. I've slit my throat professionally. No one's going to hire me based on my background. No one's going to hire me if they see one of these podcasts. Retired alcoholic, we're not going to hire him. But if a company called and said, Mike, we want to take a chance on you and we want you to work for us, they're going to get a dedicated, loyal, outstanding employee. But it's not going to happen because of the stigma. This is what addicts, alcoholics, ex-convicts, even people in the military go through on a daily basis in this country. So what actually helps? What makes things better? There is some good news. We know how it works. We got to be committed to fighting stigma long enough to get it to people. Right? We need to get people medication-assisted treatment. What is medication-assisted treatment? It's like methadone, naltrexone. I take a Coprocet and naltrexone. Now, it helps with cravings from alcohol. Right? I'm going to be done taking it out. 5 months sober yesterday. Usually stay on that about 6 months. Right? It's one of those things that can help the right people. Now, the way that I see it, my addiction, is that it is a piece of multiple pieces. Right? AA, huge part of my life. Every morning, I'm at AA. Huge part of my recovery, right? I also go to an IOP program. Huge part of it. Naltrexone, support at home. Those are the things that can help people stay sober long term. Those types of treatments reduce the risk of overdose death by 50%. Things like methadone. It cuts the risk of relapse by 60%. We have medicines like that for other illnesses. That's just given away. It doesn't happen all the time to the addict and alcoholic. Peer recovery support services. What is peer recovery support services? AA, IOP programs, could be a sobriety group that meets in the park, you know, could be a smart recovery, it could be recovery dharma, it could be a million different things, but peer recovery support increases long-term sobriety by up to 42%. These are great programs because as someone who is in recovery, I feel the best I can feel outside of my family unit and the support I get at home with other addicts and talking about, you know, our disease. Harm reduction methods. Harm reduction, what is that? Harm reduction is Narcan, basically. Needle swaps, all kinds of things. I think they're called needle exchanges, safe use sites. They can reduce HIV and hepatitis C rates by over 70%. They can cut overdose deaths by 30 to 50%. And these places are absolutely shunned in the world. You know what doesn't help? Judgment, shame, tough love, and the worst one is actually the sound of silence. What can you do if you're in recovery? What can you do? I talked to a friend of mine who I used to work with, and he was in active addiction 17, 18 years, and he's been sober for roughly the same the same amount of time in recovery. And we were having a conversation on the phone today, and he said, hey, just, you know, make sure you're loud and proud. And I am. The more that we get out there about how surviving addiction, how the mistakes that we made can get people help, it all, you know, if you blow hard enough in the wind, you know, a flower eventually moves type theory. One of the things that I want to talk about is we have this DARE mentality in the United States. And DARE was that great program in the 1980s that said, just say no to drugs. Well, that was actually a disservice, because what it did was it took our current generation of middle-aged Americans and older Americans into, if you do drugs, that's bad. Nobody who's an addict woke up and said, hey, you know what? I really want to make a career move. I'm going to become an addict. I'm going to become an alcoholic. Nobody does that. But rather than providing support, we provided wrong, bad, shame, jail, incarceration, all these things. So what can you do? And I'm going to kind of make this as practical as I can, and you know, I'm kind of taking notes and jotting this down, trying to get this going in my head. And I said, you know, there, I was cognizant of it. I apologize for that, Nicole. We have to use people first language. We need to ditch things like junkie, addict, drunk, alcoholic, loser, that sort of thing. And if we change the way we talk about it, is person with a substance use disorder. Do you call someone with cancer a weakling because they can't get out of bed? No. You say they're a cancer person, a cancer survivor. So, substance use disorder. And it doesn't matter what the substance is. It could be alcohol. It could be benzos. It could be opioids. It could be whatever. Cocaine. Substance use disorder is a much better way to speak generally of people with addiction issues that isn't a negative stigma. Speak up in the rooms that don't expect you to, right? If you're at work, at church, you're at a family barbecue, if you're in recovery, tell your story, because it matters, right? The next couple episodes, we're going to be having people that I'm in treatment with currently are going to come on. You know, I was talking about my podcast, and people we're like, hey, I'd love to be on that. So we're going to have a couple guys from that with different backgrounds. And it's great, because that's how we get the conversation started. I find it really, really interesting that people raise their hand and say, hey, can I get on your podcast? I got 100 subscribers. They're not doing it to be famous. They're doing it because it would make them feel good sharing their story. To be loud and proud, as my friend Robert says, because it does matter. You know, educate people. Share real stats. Share the podcast. You know? Go on to your social media and say, you know, I'm listening to this podcast. You can even say, I'm okay with the fact if you call the alcoholic felon loser. But he's got this podcast and he's got some good points. And you may know somebody in your life with addiction. Check it out. Counter the myths with truth. Addicts are not bad people, not even remotely. Some of the most beautiful people I've met on the planet, I've met in recovery. But they don't always feel that way. I don't always feel that way because of what we're talking about today, and it's the stigma. Support harm reduction. Narcan saves lives. If you own a business in a populated downtown center, get Narcan. Train your employees how to use it. You may save a life. And that would be the greatest thing you could ever do in your life by helping someone else. Safe use sites reduce deaths. If you can support them, support them. Don't shun them. Don't be the people that if a safe use sites moves into your neighborhood or in your community, don't be that person on social media being an idiot with your keyboard. You know, we're going to have a bunch of junkies running around. You're going to have people with substance use disorder running around, but they're going to be able to not just use in a safe place where they're not going to die, because I'd like to think nobody wants people to die, but also in a place that can offer education, treatment options that aren't draconian in nature. And it's so important because recovery doesn't start if you're dead. If recovery kills you, you never recover. There is no recovery. Be a helper. Care. You know, vote for change. Support candidates who are interested in funding rehab, not jails. And when I say rehab, I'm not talking about inpatient million-dollar rehab centers. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about state places private places that accept state funding that get people the help they need. Safe detox facilities. That's not always a hospital, folks. It's not. Because 90% of what's going on is mental. And sometimes the hospital is not the best place to detox to where you make that next step. It worked out for me. But it doesn't work out for everybody. Some people have to go to a treatment facility and detox. Because as they're detoxing, the nurses are caring, they're understanding. They don't have that stigma. They work with people with addiction. They start getting them up, getting them to the group counseling sessions that are going on the other side of the rehab facility and the residential treatment program. Getting them a taste of it. Encourage them to make the choice of not just staying here for detox and trying to white knuckle this, but stay for 30 days of in treatment or 45, 90, whatever it takes. Back policy that treats addiction like a healthcare issue and not a crime. And that's so difficult. Because yes, drugs are bad. And people with addiction do commit crimes. But if we can prevent those things from happening in a positive, supportive manner, crime will actually go down in these verticals. You know, lead with love. Don't lead with hate. If someone's struggling, don't say why. Say, I'm here. And you may not know how to help that person. But tell them you're there. Tell them you'll help work through it. Try to get them help. you know, society, if you've been carrying that weight of addiction and the shame that society puts on top of it, I know I've been there. I want to say something to you. You're not dirty. You're not broken. And I guarantee you, you are not beyond repair. You're a person. You're a human being. You're a survivor. And if the world won't give you a second chance, fuck them. Take one anyway. Because I see you. People that hopefully listen to this podcast see you. People that I'm in treatment with, that I'm in AA, we see you. We believe in you. And you can do it. If you have questions about how do I get into treatment, feel free to reach out to me. You can do it through private messaging via Facebook. You can do it through YouTube. You can do it through our website in the contact. And I will do my best to help you, to get you what you may need. Because we've been there. And I've been that reluctant person. And questions like, what's inpatient rehab like? How do you feel? I can't tell you how you're going to feel, but I can tell you how I feel. So continue to stay loud, stay honest, stay alive, and do those things. And remember to be freaking nice, because you never, ever know what demons people are dancing with. And go see that movie. It is absolutely fantastic. Brad Pitt, guy in recovery. So have a great weekend. It's summer, post 4th of July. We'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode, where we're gonna actually start having guests on and moving forward with kind of the community aspect of addiction. We're going to share other people's stories. And if you want to be part of the conversation, feel free to send us a message, and we'll do everything we can to get you on. But with that, have a great end of your work week, and we'll see you next time.